You're listening to The Oddscast, the original UFC betting podcast that's straight to the point. Hosted by leading MMA oddsmaker Nick Kalikas and MMA journalist Brian Heminger, they provide you the absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting. MMAoddsbreaker.com. Don't place your wagers without us.
Welcome to the Oddscast, presented by BetDSI. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC on ESPN Plus 13 event, which takes place in Sacramento, California. If you're unfamiliar with our format, Nick and I will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, Kyle Marley lost 1.72 units on his free bet for UFC 239 on Luke Rockhold, but he did come back and win 12 units on his premium bets. Kyle has his bets and fantasy MMA picks available now on MMAoddsbreaker.com. Back to the present, UFC 239 features a 12-fight card in total and will be aired exclusively on ESPN Plus this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking things off on ESPN Plus is a bantamweight contest between Benito Lopez, who is 9-1, and Vince Morales, who is 9-3. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Couple quick shout-outs before I get started here. Of course, BetDSI.eu, our official sportsbook sponsor for the Oddscast, so make sure you guys always show BetDSI some love, and make sure you guys head over to our premium picks tab on MMAoddsbreaker.com and check out Big Marley 3's premium plays. He's got his DraftKings article available as well. The guy's been killing it. You're missing out if you don't sign up for his premium picks, so check out Big Marley 3's premium picks at MMAoddsbreaker.com. And getting right into this fight, Benito Lopez, open minus 265. Vince Morales, the comeback, plus 185. That was the opening line. And what you're seeing right now over at BetDSI is Morales actually the favorite at minus 141. The comeback on Lopez at plus 125. So more action coming in Morales' way. I'm a little bit surprised with that much action coming in his way. I mean, this is going to be a competitive fight, and I do understand why everybody came in that way. I mean, the opening line was obviously set a little bit too high, and Morales is extremely underrated. The guy's a very tough out, and I'm glad he got on track and got the best win probably in his career in his last fight over Zahabi. That really showed, I think, what he's capable of, because Zahabi had a lot of hype. I mean, he was known for striking him, you know, from everything with TriStar. The guy had quite a bit going for him, and for Lopez – or I'm sorry, for – Morales to come in and just steal the thunder from him and get a quality win like that was very impressive. So again, he's very underrated. I think that actually is one reason why everybody's kind of hopping on his bandwagon right now for Morales, because that was such an impressive victory and a solid win for him. But Lopez, on the other hand, man, he's looked pretty good overall as well. I think he's one of these guys that, you know, he has his issues with stamina as the fight progresses a little bit, because he's such a spark plug. I mean, he goes 100 miles an hour and he's so aggressive when he does so. It kind of wears him out as the fight progresses at times. So he does have some cardio issues, but outside of that, the guy's fun to watch on the feet. He can be very effective. He's got a little bit of an unorthodox style that is kind of hard to deal with. And then not just that, I mean, the guy is a heck of a grappler at times as well. He's able to get the fight to the floor. He scrambles out of bad positions if you put him on his back. Now, his last fight against Bermudez, of course, he got submitted in that fight, but Manny Bermudez, I mean, you got to kind of throw that out the window in this matchup here, because Morales does not have anything close to the jiu-jitsu Bermudez does. He's not going to have to deal with those kind of issues from Morales here. So Lopez, I mean, like I said, I can kind of understand that loss, and styles make fights, and this is a completely different fight. So that's why I think this is going to be a heck of a scrap. It's going to go back and forth. I think, again, Morales is very underrated. He's a very complete fighter, but I think Lopez is going to be kind of a step ahead of him. He's going to be a little bit more aggressive. He's going to be pushing a higher pace overall. He might be able to get some top position along the way. And even though he does slow down, I think he's still going to do enough to steal rounds on the scorecards here and possibly even finish Morales as it goes. So I'm going to pick Lopez. I think that the early action on Morales is justified. I understand coming in, because this is going to be a very competitive fight and taking those odds. But right now where it stands, I think it is a dog or pass situation. So I think it's Lopez or pass. I'm going to pick him to get the W here over Morales in what should be a very close, competitive, but fun fight.
My issue with Lopez is he is a very strong starter that tries to take his opponent out quickly. And if that doesn't work, he kind of runs out of steam a little bit. So, I mean, we've seen that multiple times throughout his run so far, especially that fight against Steven Peterson where, I mean, he was all over him, but allowed Peterson to come back in the contender series because he just started to gas. And against somebody like Morales, who is a talented, fundamentally sound striker, I think Lopez, if he tries that strategy, he's going to be in trouble. I mean, even though he's going to be taller and is going to have a reach advantage, he's still the kind of guy that just wants to get in your face and take you out quickly. And Morales is durable. He's got solid overall technical striking and defense. And I feel like the longer this fight goes, the worse it'll be for Lopez. So I wouldn't be shocked to see Lopez win early. And I mean, if he wins this fight, I think it's going to be by early knockout. But for the most part, it seems like Morales, he's more vulnerable on the ground than he is on the feet against people. And if Lopez can't take him out quickly, I think Morales turns the tide on him. I think Morales probably takes the second round and potentially puts him away in the third round. So Morales is going to be my pick. Now dropping down to the women's strawweight division, we have Livina Souza, who is 13-1, taking on Brianna Van Buren, who is 8-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Souza open -170, the comeback on Van Buren at +130. And right now what we're seeing over at BetDSI is Van Buren -120, the comeback on Souza +107. So another spot where the line flipped and more action coming in Van Buren's way. And I understand it. She's coming in off of some momentum. She's got a lot of hype going for her. I mean, if you look at her skill set, Van Buren has that wrestling to go along with some good grappling. She's a brown belt, I believe, in jiu-jitsu. So she's very game on the ground, but it's her fighting style overall. I mean, she's quick on the feet. She's got some explosive power. You know, she has that athleticism, and she's the type of fighter I think that makes huge improvements if you watch fight by fight. So she's very game. She's training with AKA Daniel Cormier and crew, along with her original training partners as well. So she's getting some high caliber experience and high caliber training as well. So there's a lot to like with her. And of course, everybody's kind of on her wagon right now because she won that Invicta tournament. So she's faced some pretty decent competition, but that's the thing here. I mean, I think Souza has faced better competition as a whole. And that, to me, she's proven a lot more thus far than Van Buren has. I think this is going to be a very competitive matchup. I think Souza is one of those ladies that, man, she's another one of these fighters that's tough as nails, hard to get out of there. She's very competitive. She has a great ground game. I mean, her jiu-jitsu's off the charts at times. I mean, she's very capable of taking the fight to the ground and finishing her opponents there. But on the feet, she's improved so much that she's actually dangerous on the feet as well. She loves to stand and bang. And again, she can mix things up well. And she's faced high-level competition. I'm talking about the best of the best so far in the world. So her resume speaks for herself. And I think this is a big step up. The best fighter Van Buren's ever faced is Souza. And I'm not so sure we could say the same thing about Souza with Van Buren. So I'm slightly leaning Souza's way in this spot. I do think she has some advantages in this fight, and it's going to show. And that experience, I mean, we could throw experience out the window sometimes when you come to kind of claim experience should win this fight or not. But this is a spot that I really do think Souza's going to be able to dig deep and kind of utilize her edge when it comes to experience and just being a little bit more game and a little bit more savvy to win rounds as it goes here. So another close fight, competitive fight. And it's tough because, like I said, Van Buren is the type of fighter that you can never count out because she gets better fight by fight. And I'm expecting her to look better than she ever has in this fight here. But I don't think it's going to be enough. I think Souza gets the close competitive win over Van Buren. So the pick is Souza.
And I'm going to go with Souza as well. I mean, yes, it was really impressive what Van Buren was able to do in one night, getting quality wins over two UFC veterans. But Souza is, you know, the former Invicta champion with a tremendous ground game, and they were going to be throwing her in against Cynthia Calvillo in this fight. So that just kind of shows what level they thought Souza was at, who is currently 2-0 in the UFC. So they were going to be matching two of the better grapplers in the division against each other. So Van Buren is talented, but I just don't quite think she's on that same level. Souza's just going to be a little taller, a little longer on the feet. And even though Van Buren is a talented striker, I think Souza, who kind of uses a bit of a southpaw stance Van Buren's southpaw stance could leave her a little vulnerable to some of Souza's attacks. And, Souza is, just tremendously talented on the ground. And if and when this fight goes to the floor, I think Van Buren's going to be in some trouble.
I think Souza can get a submission from just about any position, but especially if she can get a takedown. And I think that she could advance to a dominant position against Van Buren, and I think that she could tap her out. If it stays on the feet, it gets interesting, because, you know, Souza, while she has made some serious strides in the stand-up, she did lose her title to Angela Hill in a, for the most part, a stand-up fight. So, Van Buren's gonna have an opportunity if it stays standing, but I think at some point it does go to the ground, and that's where Souza's gonna shine. So, Souza's gonna be my pick. Now, moving up to the bantamweight division, we have Liu Pingyuan, who is 13-5, taking on Jonathan Martinez, who is 10-2. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Pingyuan opened -285, Martinez +205, and right now what you're seeing over at BetDSI is currently Pingyuan -141, the comeback on Martinez at +125. So needless to say, dog got bet here as well. Action came in on Martinez, dropping the line to what it is now, -141 for Pingyuan. I agree with the early action. I get it. I mean, that line was definitely set too high. I think Martinez is another one of these guys that's extremely underrated. He has shown some flashes of what he's capable of the last few fights, which is good to see. And I think this is another tough test for him. And I think that, again, at +205, people saw the value here because I think Martinez is an extremely tough out. And Pingyuan, even though he showed a lot of improvements, and he's one of the, another one of these Chinese fighters that's really improved his game quite a bit. I mean, he's working with a crew at Alpha Male. He's one of these explosive, strong fighters that comes in, and he's got knockout power in the feet. He's got good wrestling. He looks to grind you out, take you down, and work his ground and pound. He also has pretty decent submissions to go along with it. I mean, he's got that Alpha Male guillotine choke. He's got a sneaky dart choke. So you got to be careful. You got to watch your neck around Pingyuan. But to me, I think as the fight progresses a little bit, Pingyuan is a little bit more vulnerable. I think Martinez tends to slow down as the fight goes as well. But it's one of these cases, I think, that Pingyuan's going to probably have some early success at this fight, maybe looking like he's winning the fight. But Martinez, he's the type of fighter that he does exploit defensive flaws in his opponents. And I think that this is a case where Pingyuan's going to make a mistake on the ground, possibly even if he's on top, get reversed. Martinez is going to lay some punishment down. He's capable of doing that as well. On the feet, I think Martinez is going to enjoy a little bit of an edge as well. And the pure power, again, I think goes to Pingyuan, but I think Martinez mixes things up a little bit better and he's going to be able to score as well. So I think across the board, Pingyuan will probably be edging this fight, but Martinez is going to be the more dangerous and more capable fighter in this spot to finish as it goes. So, and if it hits a scorecards, honestly, I think with Martinez kind of turning things around and finding his moments and his spots, I think more so in round two and round three than anything else, I think it's going to be enough if it goes to the cards to probably win him the scorecards as well. So it should be a competitive fight. I understand the hype surrounding Pingyuan overall. I think, you know, the UFC is kind of expecting him to come out here and get a W. I mean, there's bigger things ahead for him, but I think Martinez is just too much of a difficult out here and he's going to bite off a little bit more he could chew. So I think Martinez gets the win and a slight upset here. And I understand, again, the value early on at +205.
And I understand the value, but Pingyuan is a very talented fighter here, and I think that he has the tools to exploit some of the problems in Martinez's game. One of the biggest flaws with Martinez is takedown defense. He's been taken down in all of his UFC fights so far, and I think that that's going to be a big issue in this fight as well. I mean, you look at Martinez, and while he is talented on the feet, and I do think that he'll be the better overall striker in the stand-up, the second this goes to the floor, it gets a lot more interesting. I mean, Martinez has not even been able to stop a takedown so far. He is able to get back to his feet for the most part, but I think if Pingyuan is aggressive looking to get this fight to the floor, I don't see how Martinez is able to stop him. So, as long as Pingyuan does not gas out and expend too much energy looking for takedowns, I think Pingyuan can stay on the feet long enough to find that opening to get easier takedowns and not have to, you know, blow out all his energy in the pursuit of getting this fight to the floor. But once it's on the floor, I think that he'll do a better job of keeping Martinez down than some of Martinez's most recent opponents, who have not been nearly as good of grapplers as Pingyuan is. And I think as long as Pingyuan can do that, he'll probably win the first two rounds at least. And then as long as he can survive and not get finished late, then I think Ping Wan can at least win a decision here. So I'm going to side with Ping Wan. I think that while Martinez is talented, the flaws in his takedown defense are going to be exploited here. So Ping Wan's going to be my pick. Now, moving up to the featherweight division, we have Darren Elkins, who is 24-7, taking on Ryan Hall, who is 7-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Hall open minus 140, the comeback even money on Elkins. And right now what we're seeing over at BetDSI is Elkins minus 109, the comeback on Hall minus 103. So not as drastic of a change here. Basically a pick'em type of fight here. And it opened virtually a pick'em with a slight lean towards Hall. Now it's a little bit of a slight lean towards Elkins. Styles make fights. And it is a type of pick'em fight here. And it's a difficult matchup, you would think, for Hall, because Elkins has the wrestling, the takedown defense, the grinding style to make this a tough fight for Hall, because Hall's the type of fighter, as we all know, that wants to get the fight to the ground. I mean, he's one of the best jiu-jitsu practitioners in all of MMA and in the history of the sport, really. The guy's special, elite-level jiu-jitsu. So if he gets Elkins to the ground, despite Elkins having a pretty good ground game, it's a wrap. He's not going to be able to hang with Hall. Hall can submit him. There's no question about that in my mind. So Hall will have his way with Elkins on the ground. I think on the feet, even, Hall can have some problems. I mean, present some problems for Elkins. He is improving his stand-up game. Obviously, he knows that's an area that he needs to work on. He's working it diligently. So I think that he might surprise some people with Elkins here on this feed. Elkins is very hittable. We all know that. But that said, Elkins still is the more experienced striker. He's the more comfortable striker. He's the one that pushes a high pace. You know, he's going to be in Ryan Hall's face. And I think he's tough enough and almost too tough for his own good at times that he's going to be willing to absorb some punishment to make life miserable for Hall. So if Hall can't get this fight to the ground, I mean, it could definitely get interesting for Elkins. So I understand there's a path to victory for Elkins, and it probably is on the scorecards here. But with all that said, I think he's going to be too hittable. I think Hall will end up finding his way on the ground. If he can't take him down traditionally, we all know that Hall has different ways, you know, rolling for your legs. He'll find a way to get this fight to the ground and kind of, you know, use his attributes the best way he can, for sure. I mean, Hall's a very intelligent fighter. So for me, I think Hall does get the win probably by submission. If it does somehow go to the scorecards, I wouldn't count Ryan Hall out there either. I mean, like I said, I think his unorthodox style, he could have some success on the feet against Elkins as well and make this just a weird type of, you know, not such a great fight, unfortunately. So, you know, I do think this is going to kind of be a lackluster fight. I think Hall can go out there and submit him, you know, quickly, or it's just going to be one of those fights that, you know, we probably want to pass over at times as well. Now, no disrespect to the fighters, but I think it has the makings at least to be a boring fight if it does play out longer. So the pick for me, though, is Hall. I just think this matchup is made for him, and I think he does get it done. He's just such an elite fighter on the ground. He finds a way to win this one.
Yeah, my main issue with Elkins is the fact that he's just been taking a beating in his last few fights. I mean, four of his last five fights, yeah, he won two of those. In four of his last five fights, he has just taken a pounding. And he did win two of those that he got a beating in, but they were like miracle come-from-behind comebacks. And that's just not good for your health, especially at 35 years old. I just don't know if Elkins has the speed or the reflexes to stop Ryan Hall from closing that distance. And even though Elkins is like this ultimate grinder and is able to wear people down, you know, as he's gotten older, I mean, it really does seem like he's starting to take a lot more damage. And while Ryan Hall is not the kind of guy that's going to exploit that and get, you know, and beat him up on the feet, because that's really not Hall's game at all. He just kind of utilizes his kicking game and has a bit of a karate style stance and then tries to get unorthodox attacks to roll in and attack you on the ground. But I think Elkins could be exploited there because, you know, on the feet, he's just not going to be very fast. And yeah, he'll probably put some pressure on Hall. I think he'll do a better job in the stand-up against Hall than, say, Gray Maynard did. But I expect Hall to be pursuing the takedown. And while I don't think it'll come easy, I think that Hall will do everything in his power, including, you know, those crazy rolls that he did, like against BJ Penn, or pulling guard. I mean, you name it, he's going to do what it takes to try to get this fight to the floor. And then once he gets it to the floor, that's, you know, it's up for grabs at that point because, he is so good at latching onto those legs and attacking with that patented, you know, 50-50 guard of his. So I think he's going to make it interesting. And while Elkins, you know, historically, this could be a bad matchup because Elkins does have the wrestling background and that grinding style and likes to put pressure on. I think the fact that he's taken so much damage over the recent years and the fact that he's at 35 years old now could make this, make him vulnerable here. So I'm with Nick. I think that Hall does find a way to get this to the floor and Hall does get the submission. But I mean, if Hall is unable to get this to the canvas and Elkins doesn't play that game, then we could see a really ugly fight here because, you know, Hall is not going to want to, you know, screw around on the feet too much. And Elkins is probably going to be trying to take his head off. So my pick's going to be Hall, and I think he does get a submission. Now dropping down to the women's bantamweight division, we have Nico Montano, who is 4-2, taking on Juliana Pena, who is 8-3. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Pena minus 155, Montano plus 115, and right now what you're seeing over at BetDSI is Pena minus 185, Montano plus 162. So line margins have tightened up, more action coming in Pena's way, but nothing drastic, nothing too crazy. So that is kind of a little bit of surprise. I mean, that tells you that Montano is getting some respect, which she deserves, honestly. I know that it was a fiasco after she won the flyweight title, you know, her weight cutting issues, all the stuff, the UFC obviously not that fond of how everything played out here, and they're not throwing her a bone here with Pena stepping in on short notice even. So I think this is obviously a difficult fight. Montano is going to be fighting at 135 pounds. Pena coming off of, obviously she had a baby not long ago, so she's been off for a couple years as well. So she might have a little bit of rust. There's a lot of factors that come into play here. But, I mean, skill for skill, pound for pound. I mean, if we were seeing the Juliana Pena that we saw before, you know, she had to take her time off. She should win this fight. I mean, she should be able to control this fight. She should be able to get Montano on the ground. She should be able to dominate the ground. I think Montano is definitely game everywhere the fight takes place, and I think it'll be a difficult fight. It's not going to be an easy fight for Pena. So I like this matchup, honestly. I think this is going to be a good test to see where Pena's at and kind of help her get back in the mix of things, because Montano is not going to be, you know, just somebody she could walk over. So I think this is going to be a difficult fight. It's going to be a close competitive fight, probably closer than we all anticipate. So again, I can understand where the line is, but I just wasn't so sure how much Montano would get respected here. But they are, you know, overall the bettors are showing Montano some support. And again, I expect it to be a competitive fight. But with that said, Pena does what she does best. She makes this a dirty grinding type of fight, gets the fight to the floor. I think at times utilize some ground and pound. Both of these ladies have some submission skills. I think it's going to be difficult to catch a sub, but Pena is more than capable of doing so though along the way. So I think it's just going to be, she's going to be too much for Montano, mixing everything up on the feet. It should get interesting. I think both of them are going to have success. But I think more than anything else, we see the typical Pena style takedowns, ground and pound, you know, control the tempo of the fight, control the cage, and just grind out another impressive performance kind of for a comeback at least. So the pick is Pena. I want to see her come back and be a true contender like she was before she left.
And I'm right with you. Nico Montano is talented, but the issue is she's moving up to bantamweight, and Juliana Pena is a very good grappler and a good wrestler, and I think that is going to be Montano's weakness here. I mean, Montano is a good striker and she can push a decent pace on the feet. She can mix it up with strike with her hands and her feet, but when this goes to the floor, it should be Pena's world. Now, as Nick mentioned, the big issue here is the fact that Pena hasn't fought since January 2017. That's 2.5 years. I know she's been training. She had a baby. There's a lot of things going into this. And she's also stepping in for an injured Sarah McMahon. So, you know, it's not like she's had a full training camp either. And coming off a 2.5 year delay, those are the only real things that are making me even pause from picking Pena. Because while Montano is the better striker, I mean, I just think that the second this goes to the floor, she's in trouble. So I think at some point Pena gets this fight to the canvas and she has good ground and pound. She has good submission skills. I think that she can win just with top position, holding a decision potentially as well. So I think Pena could win this by TKO, submission, or decision. And with Montano, I think she only wins it by decision on the feet. And that's if Pena is just completely unable to get her wrestling going. And I just think that that's going to be asking too much. So I think Pena does get that wrestling going. I think Pena wins the decision. So Pena's going to be my pick. Now, moving up to the featherweight division, we have Andre Feely, who is 19-6, taking on Shaman Moraes, who is 11-3. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Feely up in minus 145, Moraes plus 105. And right now what we're seeing over at BetDSI is Moraes minus 109, Feely minus 103. So now they're pick-em type of fight. Line margins have tightened up. More action coming Moraes' way. I understand it as well, man. Both these guys have looked really good, even in his loss, in his last fight from Race. I mean, against a very game Yusuf. That was a close competitive fight, so that was not a bad loss. I mean, Yusuf is doing some great things, and I mean, obviously the UFC feels very highly of him. Feely's been looking great as well. I think he's never been better, to be honest with you. I mean, the guy has really such a good overall game, and he's utilizing his wrestling a lot more. He's got takedown defense to go along with it. He's obviously a punisher on the feet, as he's always been. But again, it's his ground game. It's his takedowns. It's his ground and pound. It's his finishing ability. It's his durability overall. Lately that's been looking really good. I know, you know, like I said, he's had some tough fights against high level competition, and he's come through in most cases, you know, in competitive losses when he's not. So Feely's at the top of his game right now, and both these guys like to stand and bang, and that's what we should probably see play out here, because I think Feely's probably the more well-rounded of the two. He's obviously has a bigger edge on the ground here, but Moraes has worked on his takedown defense quite a bit, so I don't think it's going to be easy for Feely to take him down. But, I mean, that's a path to victory, and I know he's going to try to do that. I mean, because on the feet, I think it would be a fairly interesting fight, but I think Moraes definitely has an advantage. I think he's going to be the more dangerous fighter. I think he's got a better defensive game overall, and he's got a more solid chin as well. So I think with all that said, even though it'll be competitive and it'll be a fireworks type of fight back and forth on the feet, Feely on the ground is capable of getting it there. I think Feely can probably mix it up enough to, if he doesn't get knocked out, he could probably control enough of the fight and steal a close decision win here, what should be an all-out war. So I've been going back and forth on this fight, to be honest with you. I mean, I could flip-flop and pick either way. So I'm going to see how the weigh-ins play out, or if anything else actually, you know, comes to the table and makes me sway back to Moraes. But for right now, I'm slightly leaning towards Feely. And I do think it's a dog or pass situation, though, with one of these guys. I mean, it's hard to lay chalk here, because I think it is a coin flip type of fight, and both of them have really looked impressive and good to me. So I think it should be an all-out war, but the slight lean because of Feely's ground game a little bit more, for me at least right now, I'm going to go with Feely.
And I can understand picking Feely here, because he does have the wrestling, and if he gets this to the floor, he should have an advantage. But my main issue with Feely is when he's been matched up with superior strikers, he tends to try to duke it out on the feet anyway, and then he gets outgunned. We saw that when, you know, he took a pounding against, Calvin Kattar. We saw that against Yair Rodriguez. So, you know, we saw it, against Max Holloway even. And then when he finally did shoot in for a takedown, he got guillotined right away. But, I mean, obviously that was a long time ago before Holloway was ever champion. You know, Feely is a fighter that it's tough to kind of get a read on him. I mean, because he does have some quality wins to his name. I mean, he beat Hakran Diaz, he beat Lobov, he beat Dennis Bermudez, he beat Miles Jury most recently. So, I mean, he's not going out there and beating bums and then losing to the good fighters. So my main issue here, though, is I think that he's going to stand and trade with Shaman Moraes. I think that he thinks that he can hang on the feet with him, and he might for a little bit, but Moraes is a truly talented like black belt Muay Thai striker, and he's the kind of guy that I think is going to just consistently outland against Feely, and maybe Feely will get a few licks in, and it'll be enough to make him think that he's being competitive, and I think that he keeps this standing for the most part. And over the course of three rounds, I see Moraes getting the better of Feely, and Moraes probably winning a decision. Now, Feely could take this to the floor, and that would definitely be to his biggest advantage, but I just don't see him consistently shooting for takedowns. I think this fight stays standing for the most part. And Feely, who is going to be a little bit taller and longer, might feel like he can exploit some of those size advantages. And I just think Shaman uses his superior technique and outworks him. So my pick's going to be Shaman Moraes. I think that he wins a decision. Now moving up to the light heavyweight division, we have Mike Rodriguez, who is 10-3, taking on John Allen, who is 13-5. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Rodriguez opened -385, the comeback on Allen at +265. And right now, looking over at BetDSI, we are seeing Rodriguez currently at -490, the comeback around +336 for Allen. Market price is about 450 or so, a little bit over 4-1 across the Dom Best screen as well. So this is a fairly newly announced matchup here. Allen stepping in a short notice. We should get that off the rip right away here. And he's got his hands full. I mean, Allen, honestly, if you look at him, he's a fighter that they grabbed from the Contender Series Brazil. He did suffer a loss. He got submitted in the second round of that fight. But obviously, he's got some pretty good experience, and he's got some talent, and he deserves his spot. I mean, he after that fight, he ended up bouncing back on the regional scene and getting a W. The guy has some dynamic hands. I mean, he's really fun to watch on the feet. I mean, he's one of these guys that digs at the body. He's got speed. He's got accuracy. He is a really fun fighter to watch strike. So this should be a fun fight while it lasts on the feet, because Rodriguez is another one of these guys that's going to have the length. Obviously, he's got a big reach advantage over most opponents, and he's going to have that here as well. And obviously, we all know, like, Rodriguez loves to stand and bang and utilize those tools, the gifts that he does have. So on the feet, this is going to be close. I mean, obviously, Rodriguez is going to want to keep his distance, use that reach, utilize everything that he's got, and he can be effective. He's just going to have to respect Allen's hands, though. I think that might be an issue. If Allen can close that gap, get inside, drill the body a little bit, and use that hand speed to check, to test Rodriguez's chin a little bit, it should get interesting. But overall, I think obviously with the short notice coming into play here, Rodriguez, I think, has the better MMA game. I mean, he's more known for, again, his stand-up game, but he does train with Joe Lozon and crew over there. So I think that his ground game is definitely above and beyond Allen's, and he will, if the fight gets tough on the feet, he will shoot for a takedown and try to get this fight to the ground. And if he does get to the ground, I think he could actually do some damage and maybe even finish it there as well. So I think Rodriguez is the more well-rounded fighter overall. He's the one that isn't stepping in on short notice here. So there's a lot of strikes going against Allen, but where the line is right now, I mean, around 4.5-1 or so, even though Rodriguez does win his fight and he has some advantages and Allen's stepping in on short notice, I wouldn't bet it. I mean, Allen has enough power in his hands to just get inside and close that gap and just end it with one punch. So you got to be careful, not worth the risk at 450, despite Rodriguez having those advantages and probably going to win his fight. So the pick is Rodriguez for me.
And I'm going to go Rodriguez as well. The main thing I like about him here is the fact that he's just a lot longer and taller here. And as long as he can utilize those physical advantages, then he should be in good shape. But that being said, John Allen is a pretty talented striker. I mean, the guy has a good jab. He goes to the body. And if he can get inside against Rodriguez, he could definitely do some damage. I mean, Rodriguez has power. Allen has power. So, I mean, if somebody lands something clean on either chin, somebody's going down. So, I mean, on the feet, this should be competitive, but as long as Rodriguez can utilize the physical advantages, he should be in good shape, especially, as Nick mentioned, with Allen taking this on really short notice. But I also feel like Allen could be exposed on the canvas. We really haven't seen a lot of Rodriguez's ground game, but I do think that he is a little bit better than Allen on the ground. So if things, for some reason, aren't going Rodriguez's way, I think he could always go to the ground and potentially try to win a decision there, or maybe even try to get a finish with a submission or ground and pound. So, Allen is talented, and I think that he does have a future in the light heavyweight division, but I just think this is a tough matchup on short notice for him. And I think Rodriguez's physical tools will be a little bit too much to overcome. Now, moving on to the main card. We have a middleweight contest featuring Marvin Vettori, who is 12-4-1, and Cesar Ferreira, who is 14-7. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Vettori's Vittori open minus 170, the comeback of Ferreira at plus 130. And right now what we're seeing over at BetDSI is Vittori at minus 143, the comeback of Ferreira at plus 126. So line margins have tightened up a little bit. Two-way action coming into this fight, and it'll continue to do so because it's another tough one to call, really. I mean, if you look at it, to me, it's clear what needs to be done here for both fighters. I mean, Vittori, I think, has looked good. He's improving drastically. He's an underrated fighter, but he's going to have to obviously watch out and be careful of Ferreira's ground game here more than anything else. Ferreira's a very talented fighter. I mean, with his size, with his physical attributes, with his skill. Offensively, the guy has some skill on the feet. He's got some length. He's got some power. He mixes things up well. You got to be careful with his hands and his feet, but also it's his wrestling, his underrated wrestling. He gets takedowns, and it's his ground game really that's better than anything, I think, for him right now because of his flawed chin. I mean, that's what you got to worry about with Ferreira. The guy, I mean, he could be looking really good on the feet, and then bam, he gets clipped and he gets put out there. So his chin is definitely suspect. It's a huge concern, and he's fighting a guy in Vittori that can knock him out along the way, even if he's winning the fight. He's much younger. He's the one that's kind of on the rise, where I don't think Ferreira's fading that much. I don't think he's one of these guys that you could consider a declining fighter, but stylistically, it's going to be a tough fight for Ferreira if he cannot get this fight to the ground. But again, that's a concern for Vittori, because if Vittori does get put on his back here, there's no question that Ferreira could have some success and probably even finish Vittori there. So it's going to all depend on Vittori's game plan. If he's able to keep this fight standing where he wants it, I think, or if he's able to get top position, obviously, on the ground. I mean, he's got to watch out for a guillotine choke, but I think top position, if he's cautious and careful, he could do some damage there as well. But I think more so than anything for Vittori, it's keeping this fight upright, keeping the space and timing that knockout blow, which should come along the way, I think, in this three-round fight. So even if Ferreira's having some success, I think Vittori is going to find his spot and probably catch that chin and put him out. I think I've seen more improvements for Vittori. I mean, he's more confident right now as well. I know he's coming off of, you know, that split decision loss to Adesanya, which now doesn't look all that bad, really. I mean, if you're looking at that fight, and again, you got to kind of throw that out the window because styles make fights, and this is a different stylistic matchup than Adesanya was, obviously, for Vittori. But I mean, he hung in there with Adesanya, and obviously, like I said, that's a dang good loss right now, if you think about it. So with all that being said, I do like Vittori to get the W here and probably knock Ferreira out.
And I'm going to come in the other way. I mean, Vittori is a dangerous fighter, as evidenced by going to split decision against Adesanya. But he's also been very inconsistent, and he's had his issues with good grapplers like Antonio Carlos Jr. Vittori should be able to get the better of Ferreira on the feet because Ferreira's really seemed to deviate from the stand-up. He knows that his chin is a problem, and he looks to get fights to the floor quickly now. I mean, he's averaging 3 takedowns per 15 minutes with a strong takedown accuracy, and then he looks for submissions or ground and pound or just to hold top position when he does get there. And Vittori is a pretty good wrestler in his own right and has a decent ground game, but I do feel like Ferreira's is better. So as long as Ferreira can survive on the feet, then, and he does have a reach advantage and he is going to be just very slightly taller and longer. But as long as he can survive in the stand up, I think it will open up an opportunity for him to close the distance and get this fight to the floor. And that's where Vittori will have some issues. I think if Ferreira's in top position, I don't think Vittori can buck him off and get back to his feet easily. Ferreira is very good at holding top position. So I think Vittori is going to be trying to take Ferreira's head off, and he absolutely could because Ferreira has one of the worst chins in the division. But Ferreira has done a much better job of protecting the chin lately and with those attempts to get the fight to the floor. So if Ferreira's able to do that, then and is not knocked out on the feet, I think Ferreira wins. I think he gets this to the canvas. I think he gets top position, and I think he either rides out a decision with that control or potentially could get a submission along the way. So my pick's going to be Ferreira, although I am nervous about his durability. Now, sticking with the middleweight division, we have Carl Roberson, who is 8-2, taking on Wellington Turman, who is 17-2. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Roberson opened minus 155, the comeback on Terman at plus 115. And right now what you're seeing over at BetDSI is Roberson at minus 200, the comeback on Terman at plus 175. So lower line margins have tightened up a little bit more action coming in Roberson's way. Again, I get it. Honestly, you got to think about how much respect right now Terman is getting, making his UFC debut in another spot where he is stepping in here on short notice as well. So Terman has some skill, and that's why the line is so tight right now. Because you would think Roberson, again, having the more experience already, he's got a little bit of hype and buzz around him. I mean, I know he's coming off of that loss, a disappointing loss, and step up in competition against Glover Teixeira. And he was doing really good in that fight before. You know, unfortunately, it kind of all went downhill for him with Glover dominating the ground there. But that said, I mean, that's kind of his flaw, obviously, is Roberson on the ground. And Terman has a heck of a ground game. I mean, if you look at this guy, I think there's a lot to like about him. I mean, he's got that youth for sure on his side. He's only 22 years old. Now, of course, Roberson's 28, so both these guys are obviously at that stage. I mean, I think Roberson's honestly in his physical prime right now, where Terman is still kind of growing. It's still, you know, going to get stronger physically. He's got more room to improve in that aspect as well. But from what I see in him, I mean, physically, the guy is definitely capable of doing some damage. On the feet, he's got enough power. He's dangerous. Again, I think on the feet, though, against Roberson, he's going to be at a disadvantage. I think Roberson's going to have the speed and the power and the stand-up ability overall. So I think Terman's not going to want to play around too much with him on the feet as much as trying to utilize the takedowns. I mean, he's got solid striking overall, like I said, but for Terman, it's more so getting those takedowns, body lock takedowns, trips, to utilize his good jiu-jitsu game to go along with it. Now, if Roberson decides to take this to the floor and try to ground and pound, he's got to be careful. Terman's dangerous off his back as well. So again, that's why you're seeing a competitive line from a guy that's coming in, stepping in on shorter notice and facing a very respectable opponent like Roberson. So I like what I see, honestly, from Terman. I just think right now it's hard to pick him with him stepping in like this and with the short notice with Roberson. If he fights smarter now, I mean, and this is again back at middleweight. Of course, his last fight, like I said, against Teixeira was up a weight class at light heavyweight, but this is back at middleweight. I think if he fights smart and sticks to his game plan, he should be able to win this fight, but I wouldn't mess around on the ground too much. If you're Roberson here against Terman, I mean, that's a problem for me. I think his IQ against Glover Teixeira was horrible. So if he makes a mistake and wants to fiddle around with Terman, in his realm again, I think he might get beat here. So you got to be careful. And I wouldn't actually lay the chalk here either. So I'm going to pick Roberson to win. I just think Terman is one of those guys that could possibly pull off an upset here. He's got the finishing capability to do so, especially if Roberson's IQ is not up to par. So the pick is Roberson, but be careful out there.
And I'm right with you. Terman is a talented fighter. He's coming in here on relatively short notice, and the guy has a lethal ground game. And if he can get that ground game going, Roberson could be in some serious trouble. Roberson has a strong boxing background, and that's really where he's going to shine here. I mean, he did get a submission in his UFC debut, but for the most part, when he's been at his best, it's been when he's on the feet, beating up his opponents. I mean, he had Glover Teixeira in huge trouble and then allowed him to close the distance, get it to the floor, and then we saw what happened there. And also when Roberson was put on his back against Ferreira, he got submitted. So Terman has a lethal ground game, and if he can get this to the canvas, then I think Roberson will be in trouble. But if Roberson, I think dropping back down to middleweight is intelligent. He has decent takedown defense, not amazing. But Roberson is definitely the superior striker of the two. I think that he can, as long as he can utilize his reach properly, I think, he can do some damage on the feet. Roberson has great power, and, as long as Terman isn't easily allowed to close the distance and shoot for takedowns, and I don't think wrestling is the strongest part of Terman's game, it's more the grappling once it does go to the ground, then I think Roberson should be able to fend off the takedowns. And I think that he does enough damage on the feet, and he potentially could knock Terman out, but I think that he can at least survive long enough to not get submitted. But my big concern is if this goes to the floor, Terman does have the submission ability to potentially put Roberson away. This is a very talented kid who's just 22 years old and has already fought at least 17, 18 times professionally. So, he could definitely steal the show here in, making a debut on the main card, but I think Roberson gets the job done in his return to the middleweight division. So Roberson's going to be my pick. Now dropping down to the featherweight division, we have Josh Emmett, who is 14-2, taking on Mirsad Bektik, who is 13-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Bektik open -185, the comeback on Emmett at +145. Right now, looking over at BetDSI, we are seeing Bektik at -156, the comeback on Emmett at +138. Two-way action coming into this fight. I know it dropped a little bit and line margins have tightened up, but there is, it's kind of been bouncing back and forth a little bit here as well. Obviously another respectable fight, another competitive line here, and rightfully so. I mean, honestly, Bektik, in my opinion, he's one of the most talented fighters on the roster, especially at the featherweight division. I mean, this guy has championship caliber skill set. He could be the best in the weight class, no doubt about it. I mean, the guy has outstanding striking ability offensively. He's got power in the feet. I mean, he's a bully. He's the one that is able to control and dictate the tempo. He's got outstanding wrestling. He's got decent overall fight IQ, good jiu-jitsu to go along with it. He's just a tough out. I mean, skill for skill, the guy might be the best fighter in the featherweight division. It's just the problem with him, the cardio, he tends to slow down during, you know, as the fight progresses a little bit, if it's a tougher fight, and he's chinny as well. So those two are big issues though for Bektik, and that's going to keep him, I think, from ever wearing the strap. And this is a difficult matchup for him against Emmett as well. So I think, again, skill set for skill set, there's no doubt that these guys are very comparable, but Bektik is the better fighter. I think across the board, you could say so. I mean, on the feet, it's going to be close. I think Emmett actually, it can definitely deliver on the feet as well. In fact, I think if it's going to be a knockout, it's probably going to be Emmett obviously knocking out Bektik. I mean, he's got that one-punch explosive power that we've seen a couple times now in the UFC, and he's capable of delivering that, especially against a winded, slowing down Bektik as this fight progresses a little bit. I could definitely see this playing out late round two, round three. I mean, obviously, Emmett has that explosive power. He can get it done in round one. And, of course, Bektik has that kind of knockout ability as well. Maybe not that pure one-punch knockout power, but Bektik can definitely KO on the feet as well. He's got that kind of skill. So these guys are capable of winning the fight, a knockout, finishing each other for sure. But I think both these guys overall, I mean, they're a very good, well-matched, you know, fight here, because I think these guys can push themselves. They have a lot of similarities, like I said, between them. If it goes to scorecards, you obviously have to favor Bektik a little bit, but I don't think it'll get there. I think that Emmett probably gets the job done inside the distance, and maybe he could rattle him enough in round two, round three to even steal the scorecards if it does hit the scorecard. So for me, it's a dog or pass situation, honestly. I just think stylistically, it's a tough matchup for Bektik, and it's going to probably show in this spot as well. And it is a shame, because I think Bektik, again, has the skill to actually fight for a title one day and possibly even win it. But I don't know if he's going to get there with that cardio and that chin being where it's at right now. So maybe he gets by and he lasts and looks impressive against Emmett. I mean, we could start turning the corner and talking about him, you know, putting a streak together. But I don't know. Again, until I see Bektik get clipped and go three very strong rounds against hard competition, for some reason, I just can't be a believer right now in him. So with all that said, again, I'm picking Emmett to win this fight straight out.
I still view Mirsad Bektik as one of the most talented featherweights on the roster. But like Nick mentioned, the flaws in his game are apparent. He does not have the best chin, and he does slow down in the third round. So those are things that Emmett could definitely exploit. Emmett is a talented fighter with a decent wrestling base and a big right hand. And, if Bektik is not in complete control of this fight, and that big right hand lands at any moment, he could get put out. I mean, we saw Bektik just obliterate Darren Elkins over the course of three rounds. And then the second he starts to slow down, Elkins, who is not known for, you know, having a lot of power, ends up knocking him out. So, and we saw in Emmett's last fight, he was losing to Michael Johnson. But in the third round, he bounces back and just connects with one big right hand and the fight's over. So that's something that Bektik is going to have to be aware of this entire fight. And if he can avoid the right hand, Bektik should be in great shape. I mean, Bektik is going to be the better striker, the better wrestler, the better submission artist. He'll be better in the clinch. There is literally no area that Josh Emmett is better than Bektik other than durability and potentially conditioning. So, but those are things that, could definitely thwart Bektik here as well. So I can see Bektik being in complete control and winning this fight and having no issues whatsoever. I could also see Bektik being in control and then having one lapse and starting to slow and Emmett connects with something huge and puts him out. So I'm always going to be concerned about that, but I have to believe in Bektik because I do feel like he is overall the significantly more talented fighter here. And as long as he can protect his chin and not fade down the stretch, then he should be in good shape. So I'm going to pick Mirsad Bektik. Now, moving on to the co-main event of the evening in the bantamweight division, we have Uriah Faber, who is 34-10, taking on Ricky Simone, who is 15-1. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Simone opened minus 195, the comeback on Faber at plus 155. And right now, what we're seeing over at BetDSI is Simone at minus 345, Faber plus 296. So those of you guys that hopped in on under 2-1 on Simone, you guys got a gift. There's no question about it. And I have a ton of respect for Faber, so I'm not going to disrespect him. But obviously he's coming out of retirement here and facing one of the guys at the top of the roster, the top of the division right now in his comeback. And I get it for Faber. I think if he comes in and gets a win over Simone, he's right back in the mix of things. So this kind of speeds up his title chase again. I mean, he's got that kind of fire in him and he always has. I mean, he's a championship type of fighter. We all know that. Faber, a UFC Hall of Famer for a reason. I think he deserves it. I mean, one of the best fighters on roster at all time in a lighter weight class is at 135 pounds. Of course, at 145 pounds, I mean, Faber is up there. I know he hasn't had that title success, but that being said, the guy's a legend in the sport and he's such a tough out because he's such a well-rounded fighter, of course, as well. I mean, he's got good stand-up. He's got speed. He's got power. He's got the IQ. He obviously has wrestling and that great jiu-jitsu game. I mean, if Faber gets on your back or gets you to the ground more times than not, you're in some serious trouble. So with all that said, though, I think, again, he's going to bite off a little bit more than he can chew here against Simone because I think Simone is one of these fighters that, again, he can match Faber, honestly. Right now across the board, I think as far as skill as on the stand up end of it, I think Simone's actually going to have a little bit more success. I think in the wrestling aspect, Faber's not going to have success there either. And then I don't think Faber's going to be able to submit Simone underground either. So I think the advantage here lies with Simone. I think he's going to be able to outpoint Faber. And, you know, in typical fashion, when Faber loses a fight, it's usually on the scorecards and it's usually a pretty competitive decision. So I expect that. I think it's going to be a tough fight. It's going to be a good fight for Simone, but I just think he's going to be too much for right now for Faber coming back in. But again, I respect it. I understand it, but Simone, I think, is on another level right now. I think he has a lot of good momentum. I think he's got a lot of confidence. You know, right now he's found his groove in the UFC. He knows that he's at the top of the food chain and the title shot looms ahead, especially with a win over a guy like Uriah Faber. So this is a big fight for Simone. I think he delivers here and he gets the job done. Probably, obviously, by decision. Faber's a very tough guy to finish. So it's Simone by decision, more than likely for me.
Yeah, my issue here is, Faber went out on top. He got a win against Brad Pickett, ended a losing streak, and it feels like he thinks that the bantamweight division is open because of what happened with Dillashaw and the positive steroid test, and you know now with Moraes losing to Cejudo. But this isn't Brad Pickett that he's facing. You know, Pickett was another guy that was at the end of his career, and you know, that was a great matchup because you had two guys that were always really exciting, willing to throw down with each other. And this time, Faber's stepping in there against a young killer in Simone. I mean, Simone has started very strong in his UFC career. And I just think Simone's going to be better with his stand-up. Simone should have better submissions. I just don't really see where Faber has an edge in this fight. Simone's going to have a better reach. He's going to have he's just going to be a little bit longer in general. He pushes a better pace on the feet. He's about the same accuracy. He's better defensively. So I just think this is going to be a tough fight for Uriah Faber. I mean, I could even see Simone looking for takedowns and trying to outwork Faber from top position, which pretty much no one ever really tries to do. So unless Faber can catch him in a guillotine choke or something on the way in or clip him with, you know, he does have a little bit of power still. I just think that this is almost a step down for Simone at this point. And while I understand that Faber still, you know, wants to compete, But I think that if he wanted to do that, he should have been looking to take on, you know, a veteran. But I think that this is, he's biting off more than he can chew in this return, because he hasn't fought in a long time, and now he's taken on a guy that potentially could be a serious player in the bantamweight division. So I'm going to side with Ricky Simon. I think he probably wins a decision because Faber is pretty darn tough. Now moving on to the main event of the evening in the women's bantamweight division, we have Jermaine De Rondami, who is 8-3, taking on Aspen Ladd, who is 7-0. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Ladd open -130, the comeback on Rondami at -110. Right now, looking over at BetDSI, we are seeing Ladd at -161, the comeback on De Rondami at +140. So line marks have tightened up a little bit, more action coming in Ladd's way. This fight was going back and forth for a while as well. De Rondami got a ton of action coming in her way, and of course, more action coming in Ladd's way as of late, and some heavy action coming in as well across the board in Vegas, offshore. A lot of respect going in towards Ladd here in this fight, which is definitely a step up in competition again for Ladd. I mean, Ladd, I think, has obviously shown that she is capable of doing some great things in the UFC so far. I mean, I think in her last fight, she really opened up some eyes as well. So I think there's a lot to like about Ladd, and I think she's ready for this big step up. I mean, again, if you look and see, her win over Eubanks was competitive. A lot of people thought it was, you know, a very close decision, which is fine. But I'm talking about really more than anything else. I mean, Eubanks is one of these fighters that's improving, and stylistically is probably a more difficult type of matchup, even though it was a rematch for Ladd, I think, than this one here. Because, I mean, if you look and see again what she's done to the likes of Evinger, I mean, just destroying Evinger, destroying Landsberg, especially in that second round, how she turned, you know, the tide with a takedown. So I think that Ladd is capable of doing that. De Rondami has always been one of my favorite female fighters. I mean, her striking ability, she's one of the best female strikers I've seen. I mean, it's just clean technique, the accuracy, the timing, everything about it. I mean, there's so much to like about De Rondami, and she's improved her takedown defense to the point where it's very hard to take her down. So I think, you know, it's unfortunate that she hasn't had more fights in the UFC, because I really think she's been kind of under the radar too much. I know she's had some quality wins. She's beat some good opponents, as of late too. And, you know, with the win over Pennington, but I'm talking about Holly Holm. That was a big eye opener for a lot of fans out there. That stands out the most as of late for her. So, I mean, she's capable of doing some great things. I know it's unfortunate. A lot of people wanted to fight Cyborg, and, you know, she had those, you know, personal issues. She turned it down, whatnot. That was some controversy there, and the UFC was pretty mad about that, of course. So there's that backstory there. So I'm not sure if she's really in that great with the UFC right now. To me, it seems like this is kind of a setup fight, honestly, more than anything else, where Ladd stylistically can be a nightmare matchup for De Rondami. On the feet, obviously, De Rondami has the edge. She is a better striker. Ladd has a little bit of power, though. And from what I see, I think De Rondami is a bit of a declining fighter. She's a little bit more hittable than she used to be in her prime. She doesn't absorb the punches quite as well as she used to either. You could see some punishment getting through and affecting her a little bit more. And Ladd does have a lot of power. So even though she might not be winning the striking exchanges, it might take as an elbow or as a punch to get through and shake Rondami up. So with that said, though, I think it's more of the case that Ladd only needs probably one good takedown to get position and start dropping bombs and utilize her ground game and the advantage that she does have over Rondami, De Rondami on the ground as well. So with all that said, I just think it's a passing of the torch. Stylistically, I think it's a tough matchup, because even if De Rondami is doing well, I mean, this has been some time now, but if you look at De Rondami's fight against Amanda Nunes, I think it's a possibility that we see something along those lines as well. Now, again, that was back quite a few years ago, but it was the situation where Nunes eventually, she struggled to get it down, and she finally got it down. And once she did, I mean, it was, you know, just a tough spot for De Rondami, and she ended up losing that fight. So I think, again, this is comparable to that. I think Ladd might have some issues getting this fight to the floor, but once she does, I think it's a ball game and it's a wrap for Ladd. So I like what I see. I like the improvements in Ladd's game. So listenly, this is going to be not an easy fight, but a type of fight that Ladd could definitely win. So I'm going to pick Ladd to win this fight, and, you know, hopefully I'm right, but I think the ground is going to come through here, and she's going to probably get it done by ground and pound, positional control on the floor. So the pick is Ladd.
Yeah, these are definitely two of the top contenders in the women's bantamweight division, and Rondami got a nice feather in her cap coming back and getting that victory over Raquel Pennington, the former title challenger. And She definitely seems like she's right on the verge of a title shot, but Aspen Ladd being undefeated and really being untested at this point, she's looked very dangerous so far in her UFC career. You know, Aspen Ladd, while on feet, she's okay. I think she's a little stiff, but does have some power. Where she's just been incredible has been getting takedowns, getting top position, and dominating her opponents. You know, Aspen Ladd is a very good wrestler, and her biggest strength, in my opinion, is when she does get top position, she dominates. You saw it against Lena Landsberg, where she got top position and then immediately just racked up a TKO victory. And then against Evinger, I mean, just destroyed Evinger on the canvas, and then picked up her second consecutive victory over Eubanks, utilizing, you know, wrestling and top control and pushing a strong pace. I mean, Ladd just seems like she has that ability to exploit weaknesses, and Randami's weakness is definitely the ground. You go back throughout her career, and she's had issues anytime someone has had a strong ground game against her. It happened against Julia Budd back in Strikeforce. It happened early in her UFC career when Amanda Nunes took her to the ground and just tattooed her on the canvas. On the feet, Randami's going to have the edge here. I mean, Ladd has some pop in her hands, but I mean, Randami is a very strong, seasoned technical kickboxer, and she has a 5-inch reach. She's going to be 3 inches taller. She's going to be longer. I mean, she's got that traditional Netherlands kickboxing ability. So, I mean, she could work over Ladd on the feet, but Ladd is so good at getting fights to the canvas and getting top position and beating up opponents. I don't think it's going to matter because, so far Ladd has had practically 100% takedown accuracy. And, her top control is stifling. And the second she puts Randami on the ground, I think it's only a matter of time until she gets a TKO victory. So while Randami does have the edge on the feet, I don't think it's going to matter because I think Ladd is going to be too tough to stop her takedowns. And I think Ladd is going to be too stifling from top position. So at some point, Ladd gets top position and puts Randami away. It could happen in the first round even. So Aspen Ladd's going to be my pick. I think that she gets the victory and potentially gets eventual number one contender title shot. So that'll do it for a full event breakdown for UFC on ESPN Plus 13. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMA OB Premium on Twitter because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Send an email to picks@MMAoddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to BetDSI. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.